This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Last year, La Crosse County saw a record number of children needing foster homes. While county officials have been working to recruit more families, the state legislature has also been responding to the growing need for foster care through a package of bills passed this month. Joining us to talk about what this legislation means for foster children and families in La Crosse County and the state are Representative Steve Doyle, a Democrat from Onalaska, Lila Barlow, supervisor for the foster care unit in La Crosse County, and Maxine Jacobs, a longtime foster parent in La Crosse. So, Lila, could you start by talking a little bit about the situation in La Crosse County, seeing kind of an increase in the number of children needing placement within the foster care system? When did this all start?
Sure. About 7 years ago, we saw a big increase in the number of kiddos coming into foster care. We had about 120 kids in foster care in 2010, 2012. We saw that just dramatically increase to as high as 180 in mid-2017. So that has just increased over those 7 years, and we've seen it plateau. So the need for foster parents in that time has also increased, and we've had a hard time meeting those needs.
How has that impacted kids within the foster care system, you know, children coming into the system needing placement?
Sure. Well, what that means is that we've got a lot more kids coming in, not as many places for them to go, and we've had to look at other arrangements out of county and sometimes out of the state for kids to go to have a safe place to be or get treatment.
Yeah, so what has the county been doing to address this issue?
Right. Well, we have been working on things such as reunification plans. We've been working with the state on looking at how can we support families on the front end so kids are not being taken into care. We at La Crosse County have done a fabulous job over the last 5 years of looking for relatives and family members from the very beginning when children need to go in placement. So we're not going to general foster homes. We're going to family. Right now, we are running about 48% of our homes being a family home, that be a grandparent, an aunt and uncle, a cousin, maybe a family friend. So those have been a lot of real big issues that we've been trying to cover here at La Crosse.
Representative Doyle, this has also been an issue that the state has been looking at, the legislature. You know, why is this something that the assembly wanted to look at? And I know the speaker also created a task force, which you're co-chair of.
Well, we've noticed those same numbers over the last few years, and I think in Wisconsin, in the most recent year that we knew of, there were over 7,000 kids in foster care. And it's gotten to the point where the opioid crisis has really started to ratchet up those numbers even worse. So I give the speaker credit for saying, hey, you know, we need to do something about this. And, you know, what I like to say is that, you know, kids who are the victims of abuse and neglect, they're not Democrats, they're not Republicans, they're children. And the solutions to their dilemma shouldn't be Democrat or Republican solutions. They should be bipartisan. And so everything that we did with the task force that he set up was done in a bipartisan manner to, you know, try to do what we can. And it's just the beginning. It's not the end of working on the solutions. But it was good to see the two parties come together on a problem that isn't going to go away anytime soon.
You mentioned the impact of heroin and opioid use and how that might be, you know, causing more children to enter in the foster care system. You know, what data do we have to support this idea that you know, drug abuse is leading to more kids in foster care?
We had public hearings across the state in six different locations, and we heard from the people on the ground who are the ones who look at who's in the system. And depending upon which county it was, we heard always it was anywhere between 80 to 90% of the kids who are in foster care come from families where either the problem or one of the problems is drugs, and more often than not, it's, you know, meth, opioids, and so forth. And the thing that really shocked me about that, and can give some perspective to people, the thing that disturbed me maybe more than almost anything was the Human Services Director from Clark County told us that when a parent is using those kinds of drugs, that it gets into their system and it oozes out through their pores. And so if they're holding their child, those drugs get into the child's system. And some of these kids tested out as higher than their parents in terms of the drugs in their system. And when the social workers in some of these counties go out to deal with those families, when they're first taking those kids out of the home, sometimes those social workers are wearing hazmat suits. So that's how bad the opioid crisis is in Wisconsin right now. Law enforcement officers are seeing the same thing, where you get too close to some of those drugs, and it just, a cop can OD just arresting people for use of those drugs. So we saw it in the numbers, and we saw it with the, you know, the anecdotes from the experiences that some of those social workers have dealt with.
Lila, is this an issue that we've seen in La Crosse County?
It sure is. I think that Representative Doyle had it completely right. If it's not drugs and alcohol, it's a combination of drugs and alcohol with mental health issues.
Have we seen an increase? I mean, obviously these have been long time issues, but I wonder if you, you know, have seen an increase in these cases.
Yeah, and I do think that there is a correlation between the number of kids coming into out-of-home care and the opiate crisis that we have in this area, and I think that goes hand in hand, along with some of our resources in La Crosse for parents to get help for their drug addiction. We have great resources, but not enough.
Representative Doyle, you mentioned that the task force held a number of hearings around the state, one here in La Crosse as well. What were the biggest takeaways for you from these hearings?
I think probably the biggest takeaway is that this isn't your mom's or your grandma's situation anymore. What we're dealing with today with the drug situation and the mental health situation calls for a different type of foster parent, different type of social worker. I look at people like Maxine, who's been doing this for a long time, and I think she's a saint for doing this kind of thing, because this is more than most people would be willing to do for as long as she's done it. We're having social workers and foster parents have to do extra training on how you deal with issues of addiction and withdrawal. I mean, when you have a young child going through withdrawal, how do you handle that? The mental health situation that we're seeing in so many cases today, we're trying to get people training to do that too. And so we have these wonderful people who are stepping up, both foster parents and social workers, but they're also saying, you know, we're not looking for more money for our pay, because these people have just been great in that regard. What they're saying is, give us the training, and every once in a while give us a little bit of respite too, so that we can walk away from this for maybe a weekend and collect our head and our thoughts and then go back into it. You know, so those are the kinds of things that we were looking at trying to deal with, and I think that this package of bills helps in getting us in the right direction in that regard.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about recently approved legislation to help foster families and children around the state and here in La Crosse County. We're here with Democratic Representative Steve Doyle from Onalaska, La Crosse County social worker Lila Barlow, and longtime foster parent Maxine Jacobs from La Crosse. So Maxine, as I said, you've been a longtime foster parent, you know, and these bills are meant to help foster families like you. You know, what has been your experience as a foster parent?
Well, my husband and I, Tom, started taking care of children in foster care back in 1977. And the type of child that we had back then were mostly, the reason they were in care was mostly because of neglect or back then we called them behaviors. What we didn't understand was that their behaviors were just a symptom of what was happening in their home, which now we do understand that piece. Drugs was not that big of a predictor of what was going on. We didn't have families so much as involved in the drug scene. Whereas today, most of the children that we have, their parents have an addiction issue. Sometimes it's only one parent. Most of the times it's both. There's a lot of neglect. There's a lot of domestic violence. There's emotional abuse. Things have changed. Our kids are so much more complicated now than they were back in the day, so to speak. They're more difficult to take care of because they have lived that life for so long. And like Mr. Doyle was saying, that babies or children that are in that environment have the effects of those drugs. So when you get those children into your home, sometimes their behaviors are so difficult to understand. And then as they get the drug out of their system, they're a little bit easier to handle. But they have things affecting them that you and I would never have ever imagined. And then they're in our schools where that they're disrupting classes. And it's really not them that's doing their choice that's making them disruptive. It's that's all they know, and that's how they're wired because of the drugs and the abuse and the neglect.
Maxine, do you feel equipped to handle these issues that some of the, you know, children have that are coming into your home?
I think back probably around, maybe 10, 15 years ago, I thought, yes, I'm very equipped to do this. But then the kids got increasingly more complex, and it seemed that my husband and I were trying to raise them as we raised our own children, and it wasn't working. It just wasn't working. Then we started attending some more educational opportunities based on trauma, and then the Wisconsin Trauma Project was started, I think, in about 6 years ago, and we latched onto that and embraced that, and we learned about how our children are different than other children because of what's happened to them, but how that can be helped and changed. So now I feel most days that I'm equipped. There are days that I don't feel like I'm able to do it because I don't understand or I get upset. Everybody does that. But with our kids, you can't do that repeatedly because they don't handle that very well. So I would say I feel equipped probably 70% of the time, and maybe 30% of the time I feel like I'm out of my league. But then we have resources here that we can get help with, or we have a nice group that that are involved in the same things that we're involved in, so we can use them as sounding boards for what steps to take next.
Why did you want to become a foster parent?
My parents were foster parents I'm 64 years old, and my parents were foster parents. And then when our birth children were 3 or 4 years old, we started doing foster care again. And we did that until they were close to high school age, and then we took time off. And then we started again when we became empty nesters. And we like it. We like having young people in our home. We enjoy hearing their take on things. They're very creative. They're very energetic. And we like to be part of our community and help make our community a better place. And what a better way to do it than to help people become good citizens. And that's kind of our goal, is so that they're not going to be dependent on the government for their livelihood or their handout. We want them to be independent thinkers and independent and able to take care of themselves.
So the legislature has passed 11 bills that are meant to help foster families and children recently. Representative Doyle, I wonder if you can just give us a brief overview of some of the, you know, the changes and maybe new programs that these bills will create.
Sure. When we started this project, we identified 6 areas of need that we wanted to work on. So first was supporting families and prevention. Obviously, every child that doesn't get into the foster care system is a child that is going to be much more healthy mentally, physically, behaviorally, and less of a cost to the system. So we wanted to look at that. Then the foster kids, the kids in the system, what can we do to help them as they go through the system? Number 3, of course, the foster parents. What resources can we give to them? Number 4, the counties, which are the ones footing the bill for these out-of-home placements. And, what kind of incentives can we give them to be creative and come up with new approaches? Number 5 was the aging out issue. About 20% of kids, 1 out of every 5 kids that turns 18 and has been in foster care for much of their life, one out of five of them ends up homeless. That's a huge disaster, not only for them personally, but for, you know, for our society. And only 9% of the kids that have gone through foster care end up graduating from college. So we wanted to address that aging out issue. And then the final thing was termination of parental rights. How can we make that process more child-centered, if you will. Right now, kids bounce around from home to home in some situations, but even if they're in the same foster home, they don't have a permanent home where they know that that's where they're going to stay. I mean, a lot of our foster parents end up adopting those kids, but you don't know until that case goes all the way through the process that this is your home and not your temporary home. And so we wanted to make that process more reasonable for the kids. So we looked at all those different things, and we took the suggestions of the people that came to our public hearings. I like to say that, you know, I went into this thinking, given my background in the law and with the county, that, you know, I knew a lot of the answers. It turns out I didn't even know the questions. The people that came to these hearings told us what the problems were, and they told us what the solutions are. And we came up with zero ideas on our own. All of these ideas came from the people that came to the hearings.
Lila, as you know, a supervisor for the foster care unit here in La Crosse, I mean, what are your thoughts on the changes that the legislature has made this session?
I have been in La Crosse County for 15 years, and I have done social work in three different states. And the movement that has happened over the last few months has been more progress than I've seen in all the other places that I've worked or here in the, you know, Wisconsin. It's fabulous to see someone get behind what foster parents need, what the kids in our state need, what the families need, and then making some progress towards that. It's unbelievable, and we're thankful that this has been put on the docket and the legislative branch is looking at it.
Anything sticks out as far as what will be helpful for La Crosse County?
Well, again, I'm taking the angle for our foster parents. And one of the biggest things that we really looked at is having the information for mental health accessible to our foster parents. Kids coming into care have issues. A lot of times they'd seen therapists before, maybe they've seen therapists for a long time. To have them go into a home and then not be able to talk with those therapists, the foster parents not able to know what's been going on, it's like saying to someone, please take care of this child. We're going to tie both of your hands behind your back, make sure you can fix some dinner and all those things. So it's just something that needed to happen, and it's one that really spoke out to us that we really advocated for a great time to get releases, and we work as fast as we can. The judges in La Crosse County have been fabulous to get court orders when we've needed them. This will ensure that the foster parents can get the information about kiddos quickly and in the right way that they need to without the delay, and that will help the healing process. That will help the home figure out how best to have bedtime routine, how best to get them to school. All those day-to-day things that, boy, before we were kind of at a disadvantage. So that's one, I think, great thing that moving forward that our foster parents will see a huge increase right away. That will be an immediate for us.
Yeah, Representative Doyle.
I'd like to add to that. I always like to say that when La Crosse County goes to Wisconsin County Conventions, we don't learn anything because we're usually the presenters. And Lila is exactly the perfect explanation of why that is the case, because so many of the ideas in this package of bills came from not just around the state, they came from La Crosse County. And the way that we do things in La Crosse County and the people that we have here, both on our staff and among our foster parents, are second to none in the state. And so they have reason to be really proud. This package of bills these are the La Crosse bills.
That's Representative Steve Doyle from Onalaska here with us today to talk about local and state needs of foster children and families. Also joining us is Lila Barlow, supervisor for the foster care unit in La Crosse County, and Maxine Jacobs, a longtime foster parent in La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Maxine, I wonder if you have any thoughts on some of these changes the legislature has made to the foster care system. Anything that sticks out to you that will be helpful?
Well, I think what Lila was saying is huge about the mental health. In my home, Currently, I'm older, so I don't have small children of my own in my home, but I have two adopted sons. And then we have two foster children. A lot of the foster families have small children in their home, and they take these kids who they have no knowledge of anything and bring them into their home. And it would be nice if they would have information that has not been brought to light, because some of the children have been in very serious situations, and their behaviors may reflect that. And then you have your own children who may be 3, 5, and 7. They need to be protected too. Not only the foster children have to be protected, but your own children. Having access to the mental health piece, the conversation with the therapist, that it can be open and honest about what I would need to know to protect my other children, is huge. I think there isn't a single bill that's passed that there isn't in some way it will help us, whether it's from education for us or education for the birth families so that the children don't need to be removed or that they can be brought home instead of having to terminate their parents' rights and be adopted. Each one of these things causes an increased trauma in the child. So each placement, each time they're removed, some of our kids have gone back and forth, home, foster care, home, foster care, home, foster care, and then foster home to foster home to foster home. Each movement is a trauma for that child. Each time it's a loss. And so anytime we can put bills forth in the state of Wisconsin that prevents those activities, we will help increase the odds of success for that child. And so I do think that this bill addresses a lot of those issues.
Yeah, Lila, can you talk about how, you know, a lot of this work is reducing trauma for these children that are having to go in the foster care system?
One of the bills talks about foster parent education and our support grant. That is our retention. That is how we keep our foster parents fresh. That is how we get the training for them. That is how we keep children in La Crosse County. Maxine is one of our number one trauma-informed parenting trainers. La Crosse has done a fabulous job of pulling together a training that we offer to foster parents, we offer to social workers, we offer to school teachers, we offer to the biological family. We're one of, I think, the only one in the state right now who is inviting the foster or the biological parents into these groups, and it's really talking about trauma. It's helping everyone understand what trauma is, how that relates to each child differently, and how to respond to that, not react, but be proactive about those things. This grant that's part of the bill will help us keep those programs going, will help us train more trainers, will help us bring all that together, and that we can get education for every foster parent coming in and retrained, because every child coming into the home, there's a new element, there's a new thing that they need to understand, and they come back through, and they take that group again. Those are all the things that with some of this movement is going to allow us to continue to do this, but not only here in La Crosse County, but it's going to take it across the state, so that our neighbors in Monroe County and Trempealeau County, Vernon County, have the same experiences and can do similar programming, and that when the schools are talking and kids have to go across the county lines, that it's the same issues, it's the same things, it's the same conversations, and the trauma that they're experiencing is met the same way. That to me is just the most valuable thing about moving forward with some of these bills.
Lila, I think you're talking about the $400,000 to create a grant program for mm-hmm. counties, tribes, and nonprofits to, you know, offer education like you're talking about, and also, you know, financial reimbursement for foster parents. You know, Representative Doyle, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, the conversations in the legislature, why creating this grant program was so important.
Well, in a couple respects. One is that it's really good to have individual counties that have ideas, have some money to see if that's going to work elsewhere. You know, La Crosse County likes to do those things. We have done a lot of pilot programs in La Crosse that people around the state have looked at and said, oh, you know, that makes sense. Let's do that statewide, or let's do that in our county. So it allows that. But we also wanted to have money available. And by the way, this whole package of bills, the total cost is under $5 million. So we're not talking a lot of money here. We're talking about common sense solutions without just throwing money at the situation. But the other area that we're trying to make some money available is for our foster parents when there is something that would be useful for those kids to do. Maybe, you know, having some money available so the child could join the T-ball program for summer rec. You know, and if doing that allows that child to make some social connections so that they finally feel like they're connected, like they belong somewhere, you know, it's those kind of things that are so important so that as that child gets older and doesn't necessarily feel that connection to a family, they at least have something that they can build upon. Because again, once they're 18 and we just kind of push them out the door as far as the legal system is concerned, they don't have those supports. And so we need to do anything that we can to help that as that child is growing up. So we're talking about not a lot of money for that kind of thing, but, you know, if there's something that, you know, maybe is above and beyond what a foster parent could afford or would normally be doing, we want to be able to facilitate that. So we're looking at really kind of drop in the bucket, but that drop in the bucket could cause a lot of ripple effect.
I think some people would have the concern that of creating these sorts of financial reimbursements or incentives for foster parents maybe would prompt foster parents to get involved for the wrong reasons for those financial incentives. I mean, I wonder, Representative, if you have any response to that idea.
If there are any foster parents who are doing this for the money, they are very short-term and they're probably out the door pretty quick because this is a labor of love. This is not a profit venture. And I'm sure that the two women who are here today could tell you those stories about how really you put your heart and soul into this, and the satisfaction you get is what makes it worth it, not the money.
Yeah, Maxine, I wonder if you have any thoughts on this issue.
It just makes me chuckle and I've had people say this a lot. You know, they say, "Oh, that's why you do this, it's because of the money." And I look where we were financially a few years back, maybe 10, 15 years ago, the amount of money we had in a nest egg and how little we have there now, because we have all these kids and we have the resources to be able to have them take dance lessons, take music lessons. We take them on big trips. We do all of those things and we pay for it because they're our kids. And we did that with our birth children. So we're doing that with our adopted and our foster kids. That's the way we have always done it. It makes me chuckle because that's such a narrow thing. And my kids, they wear the same shoes that everybody wears. They're in La Crosse, has an LCBA, which is a basketball thing that's not cheap. And they're in all of these things. They're not in the programs that the county has. They're not in those things because in those programs, there are lots of children just like them who have emotional problems, who have behavior problems. And when they're all together and they're all interacting, the behaviors are all the same. So we normalize our kids' contacts by keeping them in mainstream activities, paying for that so they can mirror other people's actions who are probably a little bit more controlled. And does it always work? No. But is it working? Yes. My oldest at home now is graduating from Central this year. He's been accepted at 3 universities. We're still waiting on 2 others. My 14-year-old boy decided he wants to be a sea cadet and join the Navy, so he's joined this Naval Reserve things for teenagers this last week. These are all the things that we feel are really important. Boy Scouts, things like that, where we all have to invest parent-wise, not just money, but time spent with that child and developing that relationship. So our kids are all in things like that where we need to be present, we need to be there, and to make that relationship, and that's how these things pay off. Money plays like, for us it doesn't pay into it because we aren't in it for that. Our kids wouldn't be in these things if that's what it was about.
Maxine Jacobs is a longtime foster parent from La Crosse, here with us today to talk about the needs of foster families and children in the La Crosse area and how they could be impacted by recently approved state legislation. She's joined by Democratic Representative Steve Doyle, co-chair of the Speaker's Task Force on Foster Care, and Lila Barlow, supervisor for the Foster Care Unit in La Crosse County. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on how state and local officials can help foster kids in Wisconsin. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how state and local officials are working to help foster children and families. More than 7,000 kids are in out-of-home care each year in Wisconsin, a number that has continued to rise. La Crosse County continues to try to recruit more foster families to take on the growing numbers of foster kids in the area. And now state lawmakers have passed legislation to help counties, nonprofits, and others working in the foster care system. Joining us to talk about how these bills could help address these problems are Representative Steve Doyle from Onalaska, Lila Barlow, supervisor for the foster care unit in La Crosse County, and Maxine Jacobs, a longtime foster parent in La Crosse. So I actually want to touch on one of the bills that has not passed the Senate at this point. The Assembly did pass it, but you know, one of the bills would have provided a free tuition for some foster children at University of Wisconsin schools and other state technical colleges. Representative Doyle, I wonder if you have any thoughts on why this measure hasn't seen the same traction as in the Senate.
Well, anytime that you're talking about spending some money, you know, you're going to get a little bit of pushback. I'm still hopeful that this one may pass. The Senate is back in session March 20th, so there's still hope for that one. One thing I would want to make clear is that even though the bill appears to say that it's going to be free tuition, we do still expect the student to have some skin in the game. So they would be paying a portion of it. And, of course, in addition to the tuition, there's all those other costs that go along with it, housing and everything, you know, meals and so forth. But, you know, the thing that I found when we were talking about that bill is that people came to it initially with this impression, well, you're just going to throw money at these kids. Why would you want to do that? Why don't we, you know, do that for everybody then? And when you look at the situation of a child now becoming an adult coming out of foster care, and as I said earlier, you know, only 9% of them are going to graduate from college or a tech school. Those are the kids that if we don't help them, we're going to be paying for later. And I can go back to my early years of practicing law. In my first several years, I did a lot of guardian ad litem work as the attorney for kids in abuse and neglect cases. And they were so cute, and it was just so neat representing them and you know, trying to help them out. And it was so sad because I would look, you know, I'd be in court several years later, and I'd look at the court calendar, and there some of them were on the court calendar for juvenile delinquency cases or adult criminal cases and so forth. And it's just like, oh, we failed those kids. I mean, we didn't give them the resources that they needed to succeed in the world because they never had that anchor that a family, you know, a family could provide to them, whether it's a long-term foster family or, you know, a biological family. And so many of these kids that are coming out of foster care have bounced around from foster home to foster home, or as, you know, Maxine said, sometimes from foster home to home to foster home to home and back and forth and back and forth, and then maybe throw in another foster home along the way there. So they didn't develop those roots. So anything that we can do to get them into higher education, which will not only make them more marketable, but will improve their social skills. Again, it creates that network. In University of is it Stevens Point, I think, has a program. Stevens Point or Stout?
Stout.
UW Stout has a program, a peer program, for helping kids that came out of foster care to navigate their way through college. And as people who are their age, who are fellow students, who are staff there, who are helping them to do something as, I shouldn't say as simple as, something as basic as filling out the FAFSA form, which any parent will tell you is worse than doing their taxes. You know, and these are kids that had never had those skills before, and now suddenly they're being asked to, you're in college, you're on your own. And when people learn about what it is that we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it, they seem to understand a lot better.
Lila, as someone who works within the foster care system, you know, what do you see as the most common barriers for foster children to get into college? I mean, do you see these barriers that Representative Doyle is talking about?
We absolutely see those barriers. And think about families who are able to take in kiddos at those teens. So say 13, 14-year-old, and boy, it's the right match. We finally have the right place. And they are that forever home. And maybe they're an adoptive resource. But we've got a family now who's got a 14-year-old in college just a short 3-4 years away. It is impossible to have a resource, that savings account, to really get them into that school situation. Having something as simple as having the tuition reduced or something that they don't have to worry about helps that family too, because not only are the kids the age out of care who don't have the family support, but it's also the families who are there for them that just can't financially support that particular dream. So this would not only help the kids, it would help the family support these youth coming in. And if we can have children get better jobs, have that higher education, a lot of them dream about being that police officer that got them out of that home. They dream about being the social worker that helped them all the way through. They dream about being that teacher that was there for them that one day when it made the difference. And without the opportunities, they're never going to be able to fulfill those dreams. And having some state assistance with this, I think would go a long way, and we'd see more successes.
Maxine, you mentioned earlier that one of your foster children is applying to college, is in that process right now. I mean, as someone who is living that, I mean, can you talk about some of the challenges that come with helping a foster child apply and get into college and do that?
Like Steve said, it's filling out the FAFSA is an incredible ordeal. My children are in their 40s, so the last time we did that was many, many, many years ago. And it was interesting. One of the interesting pieces I found with the FAFSA form, and this bears for our children, is kids who are adopted after the age of 13 automatically don't have to include our income. So they do get... I don't know what that's called, the Pell Grant or whatever that piece is that they don't have to pay back. They do get a larger chunk of that, but it isn't even half of the tuition. So they still have to pay for the other half of their tuition, plus their room and board and things. So we've adopted kids, older kids, because that's generally what we have in our home, are older children. When you know that the child, at least in our home, when we know that the child is not leaving, we start taking the monies that we were receiving for that child and putting it in a savings account for them for college. But you don't know that until the TPR happens, and then, you know, you just do the best that you can. School is daunting. You're dealing with kids who emotionally, their chronological age may be 17 or 18, but emotionally they're 7 or 8 because of... the trauma and the neglect. They usually, when under stress, go back to that earlier age, and that's where their behavior lies. So you can understand how overwhelming that is for that child to think, I am leaving my home. I am going to a school where I know practically no one. I don't know how I'm going to be able to handle this money because I do a real poor job of it now. Who's going to be there to help me? So you're trying to navigate through all that with the child and build up these skills and the self-confidence. And then on the back of the whole thing, you're trying to come up with the money to make it happen for the kid. So it's daunting. It's overwhelming most days, but it's doable. And I've had people say to me they don't feel that's fair, that because they're in foster care that they would get any monies for that, because my kids, they say, didn't get that. And then my response to that is, but your kids had you for your entire life. For their entire life, you have been their parent. They have been in one home or two homes, but you have always been there. My kids have lived in 8, 9 homes each, and they've never had the same parents more than a year at a time. So you, that's what your children have that my kids don't have. So I think my kids would take that place. They would rather have that one parent and that one home versus the help with college, and I would willingly trade that. But that's not how it works. So now we just have to make the best of what we have. And if we can show these kids that not only do we as foster parents care about them as adoptive parents, but we as part of the community, and that's what we are a community here. If we as a community care for them, that's really a big deal. I had a social worker tell me, must be 30-some years ago, if you can just give that child that one warm memory that they can draw on in their adult life when things aren't going so well, you are successful as a foster parent. Well, I think that that's not enough. I think we have to give them more than that one warm memory, and it has to come from all of us because they've never had that. So getting kids off to college is scary for the parents and for the child because we don't know if they're going to be successful. We don't know how far it will go, but I think they're pretty brave and heroic for even trying because the odds are so against them. So
that's Maxine Jacobs, a longtime foster parent from La Crosse, here with us today to talk about local and state needs of foster children and families. Also joining us is Representative Steve Doyle from Onalaska and Lila Barlow, supervisor for the foster care unit in La Crosse County. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. We've been talking about a package of bills that was passed in the legislature, and one of the other bills that has yet to pass the Senate involves a committee to study caseloads for social workers. You know, Representative Doyle, I wonder if you could talk about why this is an issue that the Assembly wanted to address.
We heard from people at every one of our public hearings that that is, I wouldn't say that there's a foster care problem, but there's a social worker crisis. When I say a social worker crisis, the caseloads that we have thrust upon our social workers is more than they humanly can handle. And you can take a look at, you know, maybe you have one family that, keeps you kind of busy that has four kids. Then you have another family that has one kid that is driving you absolutely crazy because the needs are so intense and it's so complicated. So it's hard to measure, you know, how many cases a social worker should have that they can do a good job. And so what we wanted with that bill was to try to figure out a way if there's an objective measurement to know how many cases a social worker should have and expect them to do a good job. The other bill that kind of goes along with that is the CASA bill, and that's another thing that came out of La Crosse in large measure thanks to Judge Gonzalez a number of years ago, where the social worker is doing their job, and then we have these CASA volunteers who are what we refer to as the eyes and ears of the court. So they're going into the foster home maybe once a week or so to meet with the kids, meet with the family. They're reporting back to court what they're seeing. They're not replacing the social worker, but they are the ones that maybe those foster kids see on a very regular basis, where the social worker may get there sporadically. And to go back to the social worker specifically, this CASA volunteer may be the steady person they see. The social worker may be the third social worker that they've had in the last year and a half because we see that turnover. People come out of college with their social work degrees. They're going to do all these wonderful things, and they jump into the deep end of the pool here, and it's like, oh, my God. I just can't take this anymore. They're 24-hour a day kind of thing. It's a high stress, a real burnout type of a job. And so, you know, those kids don't have the benefit of that one person who knows their case and can shepherd it through the system. So that's what that study it was to look at, is to figure out, you know, where is the breaking point and where should we be cutting that off?
As Representative Doyle described it, a social worker crisis. I wonder, Lila, if we are seeing that in La Crosse County.
We are absolutely seeing it in La Crosse County. Workers have too much. They have too many cases. The mandates, which are expected, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't be there, but it's so much. And we have a lot of turnover. Right now we are working with three workers down in our ongoing units, and that has been for the last 3 or 4 years. Every time a new worker comes on a case, we say that that moves the case backwards 6 months. And if a child's had three workers, we have just now moved their permanency a year and a half backwards. We are definitely in a crisis.
Do we just not have enough people going into social work in the state, or, you know, kind of what are the barriers to making sure that we have an adequate workforce of people to handle these cases?
I think what we see are 10, 15 years ago, as Maxine had mentioned earlier in the show, is some of the kids, some of the issues weren't as daunting as they are now. The complicated cases that are coming in, we have both parents who are drug addicted. We have mental health on top of that. We have kids who are having behaviors and trauma that we don't know about. It has just increased and increased and increased. So that family that maybe would have taken, you know, a little bit of your time, maybe one child, could now take days and days of your time. That is what we're looking at, the complication of the types of families coming in, the lack of resources across the whole state for kids to get help with treatment, for parents to get help with treatment. That has added to the crisis. And you couple that with secondary trauma. So a worker going in and meeting with a child or meeting with the parents and hearing about the domestic violence, hearing tragedies that the children have gone through, that secondary trauma gets to you. And social workers that are coming right out of college, jumping into the deep end of the pool, sometimes it's just too much. It's just too much. And when we're asking for them to do all of that, and then we're having a high caseload of 18, 19 families, it's just too much. A committee to really look at caseloads, I would hope, would look at all the factors that a worker has and have some guidance for us, some guidance for the state. Milwaukee has had some guidance put in there. We'd like to see that across the state. You know, what would be a fair caseload? What would that look like? What would those secondary traumas need to be reduced? You know, and how do we keep workers once they're here?
Maxine, as a foster parent, have you seen this, the impacts of this kind of high turnover among social workers and kind of the stress that they seem to be under with such a high caseload?
Oh, absolutely. Used to be back in the day, where our kids have a social worker and we could call them or get a hold of them and find the answers. But nowadays, they're in their office rarely because they're always out running down things, putting out fires with their kiddos. So you email, that's a good tool that we have. But really, it's hard for them to get back to you because you're just one of maybe 20 cases. I'm seeing a lot more placements. Our last four placements, each of our children had two social workers assigned to their case because their cases were so complex and heavy. So you have two people working with each child because of the complexity and where their families are in the legal system and what's going on. It's been daunting. Because we've done this for a while, we know how to go and get the responses that we're looking for. But a new social worker or a new foster parent isn't going to know how to maneuver that. You know, when they first start, you know, it's just overwhelming to them. You know, you feel kind of alone. You get this kid, you're supposed to be this great parent, and things start to swirl and go out of control. And how do you get the help when you need it? Because if you call them in the afternoon, you might not get a response till the next day. And by then, you know, the situation could be irreparable. But that's because they've got 20 other cases. So it's nobody's fault. It's just the circumstance. So it would be nice if we had more workers that we could rely on.
Representative Doyle, you know, you've talked about how La Crosse County has been a leader in this area of addressing the foster care system and has really tackled a lot of these new programs. I wonder how the state hopes other counties will be able to, you know, maybe kind of take on these programs that La Crosse County has set on. You know, how are other counties going to be equipped to take on these new challenges, I guess?
Well, obviously, money is always an issue, but so much of what we do isn't just revolving around money. It's just trying a different approach to things. And, you know, I think that La Crosse has established a reputation throughout the state that people will tend to look this direction to see, well, what's La Crosse doing? You know, as I said before, at the Wisconsin Counties Association, people have come to hear what La Crosse is doing. And so, you know, to not just have La Crosse being the ones to, you know, come up with new ideas, but to incentivize other counties, because the matching grant says that those counties just put in 10%, the state will put in the other 90% if they've got an idea that might help the problem. Great, you know, let's get other people on board too. So we're excited about that. I mean, we've got a lot of good people throughout the state. You know, good human services staff, good, you know, foster parents, good social workers. I mean, we've got the people here. It's a matter of giving them the resources that they need and turning them loose, because I think that there's a lot of really good ideas out there that are just waiting to hatch.
We've been talking with Representative Steve Doyle from Onalaska, Maxine Jacobs, a foster parent from La Crosse, and Lila Barlow, supervisor for the foster care unit in La Crosse County, about the local impacts of recently approved legislation to help foster families and children in the state. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.